The next case is 99-1586, Henry Lindsay Wyland, Holly Wyland, and Danielle Wyland.
Successfully treated for her addiction? ideally that the best interest of the child will be served by being with its natural parents. If the parent is unfit, the best interest is not served.
Well, sure, but the idea here, I think, is to have the court orders the parent to be evaluated and also treated. I think the purpose of that is so that the parent can be a so-called good parent, isn't that the reason for this? Or is it just to help this woman get off her drug addiction or whatever and be on her way without regard to the family? That's not really the purpose of it, is it? That's not why juvenile courts or courts send parents to treatment, is it?
The purpose of the treatment is to enable a parent to provide adequate support or care to the child. And if the problem is a mental illness or a drug problem, then the treatment is going to be to remedy that problem and to remedy any other problems that is the reason for the removal of a child, whether it be improper discipline, unstable housing.
Well, I think you do agree, as I read the brief, you agree that if the parent had sought the treatment herself here without the court ordering treatment, as of course increasingly have to do in our age, that conversation, meeting with the doctor, would have been confidential and the services could not have gotten the records. The reason for that privilege, if you will, or that privilege is, isn't it so that the patient is very forthcoming with the person treating the patient, so that the person treating can give the patient the full advantage of his or her training?
Absolutely. That is the purpose involuntary.
In the voluntary, yeah.
Right.
Well, then why is that not, why does it matter then if the ultimate goal is to have the patient be forthcoming with the professional? Why does it matter that the court has ordered the parent to the professional? This courts are having to do this, as you know better than I, increasingly because adults don't get the treatment they need. So they come to court, there's a problem, and the court orders them to be treated. It's involuntary, but the end goal is the same, is it not? We want the patient to be forthcoming with the person who's treating the patient so that the patient can recover or can be relieved of their disability that caused them to not be a good parent. It gets them into your jurisdiction originally. I'm having difficulty understanding this distinction between the interest of the parent and the interest of the child. It seems to me in this situation, they are the same.
In this situation, I would respectfully disagree. They are not the same because the only consideration, the paramount consideration in permanent custody cases is the best interest of the child. And the courts are directed to specifically not concern themselves with the effect of any particular disposition on the parent. The only consideration is the best interest of the child. And realistically, at this stage of the proceedings, the child has been removed from the home. So the situation is very serious. And the parent has not voluntarily sought help. So it has to be imposed upon him for the good of the child.
This is a focus not on so much the parent's privilege, but focus on using the court to evaluate the effectiveness of the treatment. For example, when I was a trial judge, we would order defendants to sex therapy in child molestation cases. And I remember one defendant went to every single session. If I had gotten a report that said he went to every single session, that would not have helped me evaluate, because what the therapist said is he came to every session, never said a word, and the session was a failure. And if I didn't know the content of the communication, I wouldn't be able to evaluate if the treatment was successful, to know that I should put that child back in that home. Wasn't that the focus of what your brief was about?
Yes, that is the focus. Absolutely correct. And I think the best example is when you have a parent with a mental illness, such as, for instance, bipolar affective disorder, which can only be controlled by medication. Of course, it's ill-equipped whether or not that parent is stable on the medication and is able to provide adequate parental care to the child without psychiatric testimony. The psychiatrist is the only person that can inform the court as to whether or not the parent is taking the medication, is stable on the medication for herself, and if not to bring children on the lot inside into the home, whether the parent will remain stable on the medication and will be able to provide adequate parental care to the child. And that is precisely what the court, or what the legislature has directed the court to consider in RC 2151.414.
There was a civil report that said they showed up at times for treatment being written up to the court to evaluate whether it was a child that did that.
No, because a summary of attendance, a parent can attend every counseling session, but that does not mean that they are participating in the counseling session. That does not mean that they are not taking drugs despite the counseling.
But you have far more than that in this case. I have exactly the same problem that I think Justice Resnick was starting to address. She, in the Miller opinion, extensively went through all of these various problems with regard to invading this privilege. And don't you have enough in this case? And why do you have to invade the privilege in this case to accomplish what your goal is, which is to terminate parental rights? The reunification plan didn't work. That's what you're saying. Now, you had before you her continuous and repeated failure to substantially remedy the conditions that caused the children to be placed outside her home, her substance abuse problems, her failure to complete substance abuse treatment on at least three occasions, her failure to complete parenting classes, and I could go on and on. You had evidence of all of that. You didn't need doctors to testify to that. Why wouldn't that have been enough? Why do you want to invade the privilege?
Perhaps a summary of attendance would be enough in this case.
No, but you had more than even a summary of attendance, didn't you? You had the fact that she was still on drugs and she was still...
We don't know that for sure. The only way we're going to know that she's still on drugs is through test results. And we can't get the test results because those are communications. The court needs to know if the parent is continuing to take drugs despite the attempts at treatment. The court cannot put the child back into the home before the condition has been substantially remedied.
Why, maybe enough in this case, you have to write off the future case. You
write
enough in another case where you only have one doctor.
Exactly. Exactly. And I think the example I provided before about somebody with a mental illness, the summary of the case is not going to, you need to have psychiatric testimony.
Don't we run the risk on the other side of this being a two-edged sword of people just saying, oh, well, the Supreme Court says anything I tell my doctor is going to be discoverable by the state, therefore I'm not going to enter into the program. And then coming to argue to us, how could you ask me to go tell them, yes, I'm strung out on drugs and I'm willing to try to take care of this problem with your help. How can you ask me to go tell my doctor that when my doctor is going to run to the prosecutor and say, oh, but do you know what she told me? I mean, are we next then going to the communicant, the parishioner to the priest? Are we going to invade that too?
No, I think that this is a very unique situation. The legislature has spoken on this issue and has directed the courts to look at this information. And I think that in regard to
not just directing him to look at it, is what you're saying. It's, but we got to get it before we can look at it, right?
Right.
Yeah.
And I think that there are factors that counterbalance disclosure. In juvenile proceedings, those are generally closed to the public, and transcripts and records of proceedings are also not for public use. So that might turn us off the fact that this information needs to be disclosed. And the court can only consider relevant evidence. It's not going to go beyond. It's only going to consider what it needs to know in
order to either place the children back into the home, yeah, or transfer them to the state. Do you have any further questions? I just have one question about the amount of information that the agency can receive from the person who's been the treating person in the alcohol and drug addiction program. Aren't they required, isn't the person providing treatment required to send the results of the tests and the recommendations to your agency? Wouldn't the results of the tests would certainly be more than, if there were tests given, more than just where the person showed up. But we're not talking about attendance, are we?
Right, and that statute pertains only to alcohol abuse,
yes,
and substance abuse. So in those cases, yes, the test will be received by the court. But in cases of mental illness,
it's not similar language with mental illness.
No. Except for in chapter, or in section 2151.414. Is there no further questions? I'll reserve the rest of my time for that.
Thank you, Ms. Davies. Mr. Miller.
Statute also contemplate that these things have to be considered?
The statute might contemplate that certain information concerning the status of the parent at a certain time, at the time of the hearing, but they can get that information, Your Honor, and that doesn't have to invade the confidentiality of the privilege of the doctor-patient relationship. They can get evaluations, they can get testing for drugs, as to whether they're still on drugs. They can do this without invading that, much in the same way that Dean Ray Miller did in terms of the commitment, involuntary commitment, and this court talked about that. And there is a distinction, maybe the treating physician, you have to get someone other than the treating physician to do the evaluation, but the point is you can get an evaluation which would not be covered by this privilege, but you don't have to invade the actual treating physician, the treating psychologist, and allow that patient, that parent, to be free to talk freely and to get the best services and the best chance of getting a treatment and get cure or help in this particular
matter. Counsel, I'm concerned probationers into treatment, particularly sex offender treatment, as a condition of probation, and I routinely got reports about how they were doing and whether they were successful or failing, and if they were failing, we would revoke probation. If we go the way you want, does that effectively ban reports from all reports in probation, Inc.?
I don't believe it does. The solution she would get is she would ask for an evaluation. That's
I mean, I'm asking it from the treating part, the treating physician. I'm not asking, I get it from the treating physician, because they are the best physician to know, in the example I gave of the sex offenders who went every session and didn't say a word, how is somebody else who comes in blind and cold going to know whether they're being successful or not in treatment?
Well, in that particular respect, I think that you evaluation of the person. Right now, is this person drug addicted? Is this person have still a drug problem or a sex problem in your particular situation, in your particular example? And the other alternative is more difficult. You can ask the treating physician, and they have to be careful as to whether the information they're providing is invading on that confidentiality that would go towards the treatment and discussion, or is it now in the nature of an evaluation for the without invading that, it becomes very difficult.
Because I'm afraid that if we rule the way you want, we're going to affect thousands of probation cases because the principle is the same.
And I think that the primary argument that I made in brief and that I think that this court has to look at is that whose responsibility is to make those kind of distinctions and to allow an exception for this confidentiality that the legislature does have. Should the legislature now, if this is a problem, if this is a problem in these types of cases that's before you today, should they then amend the statute to allow for the introduction of medical evidence from treating physicians concerning the parent? And I think that in the past, there's been several cases in terms of state versus immigrant, was a DUI, where there was an appeal to this court to essentially for a policy for DUI to allow certain medical evidence in terms of what was taken from that patient while they were being treated so that they could prove the DUI case and the seriousness of DUIs across the state as well as across the nation. But this court rejected that and referred to the legislature. And what did the legislature do? They amended the statute to allow for that information to come in.
In this case, we have a statute that says to the court, you have the right to order treatment, you have the right to order counseling, and then you have to evaluate that before you can put the child in. And isn't there, you know, you talk about, well, the parent might not reveal everything because it's going to be public. If that parent wants that child back, isn't it a stronger motivation for that parent to know, if I'm going to get the child back, I have to cooperate because the court's going to know if I don't cooperate. I mean, we're looking at getting a child back into a home where you're now going to hamstring the court from evaluating effectively. Do you dare bring the child back in? We have some horrible stories of people not knowing enough and putting children back in homes, and you're taking that tool away if you go the way you want.
I don't believe you're taking that tool, but I think what you're doing is that you're making the court, you're making the court have to get that information the best they can through evaluation. What you're doing is trying to make that family whole. And one of the other purposes behind that statute, in addition to what's best interest of the child, is also trying to secure that with a family member, the parent, in that family setting. And if we are resetting them up for failure by saying everything you say is going to be subject to review in the court, and allowing and then forcing that parent to make a decision, well, I'm going to hold back, I'm not going to tell everything that might help me in getting better, be it a psychological issue, being a drug issue, by holding back because it's going to be disclosed to the court.
These statutes do not provide any waiver on the parent that is going to be ordered into treatment, do they?
That's correct.
The probation, I believe that all statutes involving probationers involve a waiver. They have to sign a waiver stating that any information, in fact, told, I think, in open court, any information that you give to the psychiatrist may be used against you, and they can weigh that and determine whether they want to give this type of information. I think those statutes do involve waivers.
I'm not that familiar, but that would be my instincts in terms of criminal defense.
So the result in this case would not affect, I don't believe, those cases.
And I think this is somewhat, I think that this whole concept that the second district came up with in terms of essentially backtracking and getting off of this voluntary versus involuntary, and looking at what treatment and the statute talks in terms of confidentiality, in terms of privilege of being treatment. And there really is no distinction, or should be no distinction, between voluntary and involuntary. The issue is whether it's treatment or not falls under that statute. The perfect example that I would make is that because it's court ordered to get treatment by a reunification plan, and most of my clients being a public defender would have to go to the psychologist that is recommending it to the court. They don't have a choice for financial reasons. But assuming that they choose not to go to that particular individual, is it any limit and they go to another psychologist or psychiatrist? Does that now become involuntary? Isn't it a voluntary act then to seek that treatment from someone else? And now, because it's involuntary, because it's the court, everything they say to that person that they chose to try to help them becomes subject to disclosure to the court.
I thought it was on Justice Rednick's idea or theory. Would the court say to the parent, you have to get treatment, but I also require you to sign this waiver so I can evaluate this treatment?
And I think that actually, if you look at the record in this particular case, part of the game plan, that they will supply the information or supply releases for that information as part of the game plan. I would say, that's inappropriate. They didn't, because that's why we're here. But it was put in the case plan. But I would say that was agreed to by my client. But that actually doesn't run around the statute of the privilege statute itself. Essentially,
the criminal case, it doesn't end around the criminal.
After the criminal has been found guilty of a felony or been put on probation.
And the parent has been agitated. You're responsible and the child's been taken out of home. And that's a pretty darn serious thing too.
I would argue, Your Honor, that there is no real exception, no exception in the statute.
No, let me ask you, the primary reason given for confidentiality is to encourage the patient to be forthcoming. In a case such as this, where reconciliation is the issue, I guess we would assume that the parent really does want to be restored to or be in a condition where the parent can be deemed to be a parent worthy of having the child back in their custody. Isn't that a strong enough incentive for the parent to be forthcoming in the parent's meeting with the professional? I want my child back, and so I'm going to be as candid and forthcoming as I can be with the doctor or whatever professional it is. Can we assess that, or is that something that we simply can't know?
I don't believe that you can know for sure, Your Honor. Well, one of the things that as a client going to was just been essentially the children taken away, putting in some sort of temporary custody, trying to get these children back. Here is essentially state action against them, you know, children. What they know, and all they know now is they have to go to this counselor system. Are they going to be uneasy expressing themselves and explaining all the facts of what might be happening in their life? Or are they going to be scared and not disclose that, with fear that it might have ramifications in terms of getting their children back? They can't analyze it. They don't know how the state's going to react to the information. So I think it does have a chilling effect on whether they can be candid or feel that they can be candid with their treating physician, psychologist, or social worker. Your Honor, I do urge this court to affirm the Court of Appeals decision and hold that...
What specific language do you rely on to say that the privilege is absolute? What specific language do you rely on to say that the privilege is absolute?
It's absolute. The privilege is absolute only because of the analysis of different cases as to here is that there's no exception. The language of the statute itself says...
What do you find in the language of the statute? The following person...
It's under 23-1702, in terms of a physician, a communication major physician or dentist,
mm-hmm.
Offer shall not testify in certain respects a physician or a dentist concerning communication made to a physician or dentist by a patient in that relation to a physician or dentist advice to a patient, except otherwise provided in Division B2 and Division B3.
Okay,
if you look over as to communication under 4A, under, I believe it's...
It's B4A.
B4A.
Right.
As using this... This division B1 to 3 of this section, communication needs acquiring, recording, or transmitting any information in any manner concerning any facts, opinions, or statements necessary to enable a physician or dentist to diagnose, treat, prescribe, or act for a patient.
Okay, that's all in 23-17, isn't it?
That's correct.
What do we have that we would think the 23-17 Chapter 23-17 applies to proceedings under 21-51.
We have nothing in 21-51 that talks about that particular privilege, or there's nothing specifically in there that says it doesn't apply, and it doesn't talk about disclosure. And actually, one of the things that Attorney talked about was the statute, which was recently passed, allowing for getting information as to what testing. And I would argue, Your Honor, that essentially that sets out the difference between treatment and evaluation, because because that essentially is asking just for information and it doesn't go to treatment.
Yeah, I understand your distinction between evaluation and treatment, and that's generally where the privilege is drawn. But I'm just wondering how you say that those privileges commanded to us in Chapter 23-17 are applicable to 21-51. That was my only question. And I don't...
In the question and the answer that I think I gave you, there's nothing in that section that excludes that. And
and therefore, when you say we should not create a judicial policy... that's the kind of thing that's ripe for a judicial policy, is it not? Whether we should or not is a different question, but isn't that the kind of thing where we do create the policy, where the legislature has left that blank?
I think there's a fine distinction there as to that if any other statute in the CSB type cases in 21-51 chapter, mm-hmm. if it doesn't speak to that, does that mean that that's inapplicable and that's some sort of conflict, so now we can have a policy? I don't believe that that's...
Sure.
And then we look at every statute that way.
I see the argument. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Miller. Ms. Davies, you've used your time. It's going to take 30 seconds.
You pretty broadly say on page 13 of your brief, accordingly, the rationale protecting communications by a parent to a physician, licensed psychologist, social worker, or counselor does not apply in proceedings under RC Chapter 2151. Why? Why should we take the protections of 2317 away from people just because they happen to be involved in a 2151 proceeding?
If you apply 23-17.02 to exclude those communications, and you cannot give effect to the plain language of 21-51.414. I think that
when... Which plain language in 414? That's the reunification statute.
That is the permanent.
Yeah.
And that requires the court, among other things, to look at medical, psychiatric, psychological, and other social and rehabilitative services and material resources made available to the parent for the purpose of changing parent conduct.
Right. Okay, stop there. We have all of those. Those are evaluations. Those sound like evaluations. Well, did they attend? Were they available? Did they comply with what was supposed to have been done? Those are all, as I read 414, that's what I think that says, but maybe we don't agree on that. Go ahead.
Okay. And another thing that the court is required to consider is the chronic mental or emotional illness, mental retardation, physical disability, chemical dependency of a parent that is so severe that it makes the parent unable to provide an adequate permanent home for the child at the present.
Okay.
One year.
Now let's stay with the chemical dependency because that's the easy one. You refer I remember they used to refer clients out to for a test, and the test then was didn't have to be discoverable, was given back to the court directly. So you had, the court already had that.
Right.
Now the first two or three in that section, I concede, sound like treatment sort of things, but you know, it's kind of when you take a broad position that all these protections that have been instituted statutorily are suddenly waived, if you will, and that's a big step for the court to take, isn't it?
The statute, the permanent custody statute, was enacted later in